We have a non-political interview this morning. I've got Ngaronoa Renata in the studio. Welcome.
Oh, ata mare e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa. This is probably the most political kaupapa that you could choose, as a speaking of developing te reo in our communities and how to do that so that it's desirable, enjoyable, and adapted to us as a hapuri, our community.
It has been politicised for, well, most of my lifetime, so yeah,
exactly.
Fair enough. You want to talk about Mahuru Māori. Now, what does that mean? And I've just brought up a website, but we're going to get it from you.
Oh, okay.
What this is all about.
Well, I think my understanding was this week is Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori. So within that Mahuru Māori kete, there is a focus now on focus me aro ki te reo, a focus on the language and the how the language is doing. So there's statistics of how Māori language is actually doing in this country, Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Yeah.
I must say I do celebrate the fact that a lot more people are using what's that mean? Adapting the kupu Aotearoa as a preferential kupu for the naming of the country.
Okay, yes.
And in many different ways, you know, through postal systems, when they're writing posters about an event.
Okay.
That was rare not so long ago. That was quite rare. Like, why do you want to do that for? But I think the understanding about the hitori of why Aotearoa belongs to us. It belongs to us.
I must admit, the name in English involves that it has the word new in front of it. I mean, I'm used to it, and I'm fine, and I'm happy to say I'm from New Zealand when I'm overseas and all that. Like it's not a problem. But just now while you're talking, I'm thinking a new part of Europe. There's a little problem there, isn't there, really?
I think the depth of understanding why we say what we say has become more of a topic within whānau in their settings and in their workplaces to say, why do we use that? Why do we? What does it mean to be from? What's New Zealand? What's the origin of that kupu? You know,
yeah.
How did? And when we realise we rethink. Well, oh, why am I using it?
Well, that's because was it the first white man to see this land? Was from Holland, from the Netherlands. So, and I've got to use their correct name as well.
Oh, yeah, well, that's disputed too, because the Portuguese have their own story about.
Let's not get into that.
Yeah, let's not go political, historical.
But anyway, our name stems from when the first white person saw this land, I think, as that's where New Zealand comes from.
Yeah, I don't really.
Abel Tasman was Dutch, and Zeeland is in the Netherlands, because literally sea land, because the land is so low over there. So I think I'm assuming, I haven't read this, I'm just like making all the connections in my head. That's why this country is called New Zealand. And it looks cool to have Z in your name.
I'm trying to find
a positive.
Yes, but the Aotearoa comes with a pūrākau. It actually has a very, very beautiful meaning, you know, and an event that took place, the sighting of this beautiful landscape by those who had travelled for many, many moons, many months.
Was it universally called Aotearoa, but pre-European times? Because the idea of naming a country wouldn't have existed in the same way it does now, like it wasn't a nation.
No, the reference was actually to an event that took place.
Okay.
So Aotearoa came out of the Aotea, long white Aotea cloud. So what was sighted on Kupes, the waka, Matawhaurua, was was it Matawhaurua? Nātuki Matawhaurua came after Matawhaurua. The sighting of the landscape. So, yes, that was very specific to the Hokianga. That wasn't okay. Like it wasn't a globally, wasn't nationally known. Like all the Maori who were at that time, well, they weren't here.
No, there wasn't anyone here yet.
Well, that's also, you know, there's a lot of discussion around that, around the Moriori, know, and their presence in the Chathams.
I think the whole idea of a nation that was called pre-European nation that was called Aotearoa, like that doesn't, we're imposing our modern view on it, and I think people would have just said what their tribal area was.
Oh, absolutely. Those are the names that would have been in use. You have to ask yourself, why do we use the Commonwealth?
You want to go there as well?
No. You know, you have to say what you do. Have to ask ourselves.
Yeah.
We're part of what? What? Who? You know, when you look at our personal history as a landscape and how it was inhabited by humans and who gave kupu meaning by landing here, and they brought with them a reo from where they were, had been before, things began to be named through that portal, and that's happened over colonization as well. So the renaming of like trees in the forest happened after the trees were originally known. Like an example is the totara.
Yeah.
Was a totara for a reason. And Māori had their own botanical or indigenous science around why it was named that, why they named it the totara.
Does it have specific meaning?
Well, it has a specific meaning because it's related to a rākau that has similar characteristics and a personality from where they had come from. So they had the inspiration by seeing this rākau, rangatira, the forest, Te Waonui Atane.
What is rākau? What does that mean?
So rākau is really rā. Okay, so the way Māori language really works in the one of the beautiful things about it is it's rā, kā, ū. So rā is sun, kā, ū means holder of light. So it's relates to, rākau relates to photosynthesis.
Okay, so rākau is describing
the, it's not describing
the forest
that.
Or the life?
How the trees are growing. It's not, it's through the lenses of Māori, the lens, the indigenous lens, which is quite different from, a really good example of that is how Māori maintain that we are always guardians of whenua. It's not real estate. Real estate became very clearly a defining of an area of land by fencing it off. So fences were unknown to Māori. And how can you say that that's your whenua by fencing it off? It didn't make sense. And it still really doesn't to us as a people, you know. Like in Whangaroa here, most people who live, most of us inherit what's called council land, but not because the council came up and said, oh, well, you can inherit that because if you mow it, you can, you know, you can, well, you can mow it. And we go, but it's not my real estate. But some people have large pieces of real estate that are council owned, and they can't, and you know, in their minds they're going, why am I responsible for mowing what's out in front of my house?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's quite a difference between whenua, the understanding of kaitiakitanga, guardians, and real estate. But I've heard many people describe that kind of random ownership or caring for council land as very problematic.
Yes, yes, definitely. And that's some of the things we talk about on the show from time to time. There's something that, like, my brain is doing the kind of Western science reductionist thinking, and I'm looking at the word rākau, and like I was looking for, and totara, I was looking for ways of narrowing down and getting very specific and putting firm boundaries around what those words mean.
Oh,
and your description of rākau is completely different to that. Like it's like in my head, I'm going life force. It's kind of a life force thing. And that's not a Western science, very specific, easily defined term.
No, because reduction, to reduce something to that level, doesn't give it the full breadth that it is. And we call that the Modi. So Modi and life force is a continuum over which we can only define, oh, that's a tree, and that's the air around the tree, that's CO2, you know, carbon and oxygen. We know that through Western science, but if we are to understand how Māori saw the landscape, we might better understand why we struggle with these compartmentalizing, compartmentalizing like a tree, like, well, yeah, that's a totara. Yes, that's its name. However, it belongs to a vast forest, a ngahere.
And I guess that's why we end up with, well, this blade of grass is mine to mow and that blade of grass is someone else's to mow.
Exactly, and we can't differentiate that very well in through the lens of Māori. Our landscape tells us, oh, well, I'll pick that up even though it's on, I'll pick up that rubbish even though it's on council land.
Yeah.
You know, we don't, it's not a problem. It's more like, oh, well, they told me I'm not responsible for that because, you know, the council, you know, they take our, got my rates and so are, they can look after that. And who are the council? They're people.
Well, they're representing the community, basically. We don't, the community often doesn't feel like they've been represented by the council. They feel at odds with them, but that they are representing the community.
It is a formula. It has an adaption of a bigger, well, not a bigger system, of a system that really was adapted through when the colony settled here. And, you know, they brought with them some of those ideologies that were practiced in Europe and decided to set up the country in that way. So they overlaid what they considered to be a council area over tribal lands, and that cut through mainly food, the places where Māori were fishing or had their, were gathering food, and they just, we just didn't get it, we didn't like, but that's the awa which our tribe uses, and you've just told us that that belongs to this borough council. So borough councils were a deliberate colonising factor.
Well, they're like an instrument of empire. Like
well, you've got to have tools, the apparatus. They call them, you know, social apparatus. You've got to have all these tools in place so that you can operate in the colony. Your police force is a perfect example.
Yeah. These are all part of empire and the centralization of control.
Yes.
And the pyramid of, I guess, a pyramid type structure of power, like that's all. And so for the person at the top, they're blissfully unaware that you've just drawn a line through an area where people grow food, and it seems and it's very arbitrary on the ground. They've got no idea at the top, but that doesn't matter because so long as they're maintaining that structure, that's all good.
Yes, it's the maintenance of the colony depends on these structures to be heavily reinforced, and you also give your allegiance. And once you give an allegiance, because the human factor, all people, indigenous or otherwise, love to have an allegiance to leadership, mana, yeah. Elders, we thrive on that. We like to know who are the people that are speaking on our behalf. And what's happened in recent times for Māori is a lot of our elders have died through a very short period of time. We lost a lot of our young leaders in the First and Second World War.
Yeah.
They were already young leaders when they headed off, potentially. You know, they put their hands up straight away to defend this whenua, but they never came home. But they had a job. They already knew that if they did return, they would be leaders in their communities because they were being coached that way. But that wasn't going to happen.
So that's a lost generation of leadership.
Absolute loss. It was an absolute loss to all of us because the leadership they showed in foreign lands was outstanding. You know, they gave their – they were young.
Well, they did give their lives.
All of the, you know, not just Māori, but, you know, they were willingly, okay, so I have to go to Egypt and Italy and Greece and all these other places for a country that's far away that I belong to. Okay, I can do that. Didn't question it.
Would that happen now? I don't think the Pākehā young people would go, to be honest, but...
Well, I think if you're forced to, and unfortunately we have a government that has proven that they can force, they can polarise very quickly a community. So you have those who we call it vaxxed and unvaxxed in the English world. In the Māori world, we call it tapu and noa.
Yeah.
The people who were best off during this... that discussion of polarisation with the unvaxxed, because they had restricted, they were restricted in where they could go, so they were protected.
And this is a perspective, I haven't heard this perspective from anyone else but you.
Tapu and noa was very prevalent. I thought, oh my gosh, all the of us who are unvaxxed are actually the most protected. There's the vaccinated people out there so-called enjoying the privilege of their vax passports, but their exposure to COVID was huge. And those who could not enter certain places were totally protected, restricted, and so it was not, we were tapu.
I haven't heard anyone say, apart from you, that they felt protected by not being able to go places, but it's a really interesting
perspective. Oh, it was totally the fact. The restriction kept us very safe.
And I think we should give the background for you personally as like a traditional, should we call you a traditional healer in this context?
Yes, that Māori
healing perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
Is feeding into your perspective there? Yeah.
And so the choice to not participate in the Western drugs that were being mandated was a horrific mandate, like on so many levels. So our rongoā became displaced, and those who chose to continue that journey, there was this whole underground market of the availability of rongoā. Like, oh, what do I do now? Says, oh, here, this is what you need to do. You need to take this and this and this. That was very, that was flourishing.
So you were part of that?
Oh, absolutely. The underground has always been the best place to get what you want. Hasn't it? And they call it in some countries the black market, but here the underground was thriving.
It's where you get the things that you can't get above ground, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, the underground in its truest sense in that situation was really about supporting those who couldn't have access to certain so-called privileges, and saying, it's okay, we got this, we've always had this, we just need to use it properly now and trust, fearless, call it the fearless ones.
So have we talked about what you wanted to talk about today?
Well, on offer, I think, and during this time, is an opportunity to see our hapuri, our community, through a lens of language and how language can enrich your, and the language in particular is te reo Māori, a reo rangatira, to see yourself as participating in a greater community. And you say, but I don't, you know, I don't mix with many Māori. Well, speak to non-Māori in Māori.
Yeah, there's plenty of people. There's a lot of people interested.
You know.
Yeah, and we've got, and we also have, we have a couple of shows, Kupu Cafe, that Whaeruhi does, and we also get Taringa from Tawamutu, they come from actually, from the Wānanga over there. So there's stuff on the air that you can listen to, and I know that a lot of Pākehā people have been really excited to hear that. So yeah,
yes,
there are people
yes.
out there enthusiastic about it.
We're on the move. One of the most creative experiences I had recently was listening to Waiatin anthems.
Oh, we've got to talk about that too, what you're doing at the old school.
Actually, on Wednesday is a whānau Waiata session with Ngaro Noa.
Who's you?
Is me.
Yeah.
Who doesn't play the guitar, but, you know, enjoys a good sing along. I really do.
So this is Wednesdays 9 o'clock at the old school?
Yeah, 9 till 11.
Okay.
But there's a lot of babies are coming, which is just beautiful.
Okay.
So I'm totally distracted. And I'm thinking, oh, which words are we doing? Luckily, I have them written on this chalkboard.
So people can come along and sing in Māori.
Sing in Māori and have that. It's a way to enjoy the language.
Mm.
To, you know, use it in that way.
Something different.
Yeah. So you don't go, oh, but you know, I can't speak Māori. And I go, oh, you must be an adult. The babies are humming along and doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're ready for anything at that point.
My jam would be focus on the mokopuna. Forget the adults. But yep, no,
that's the easy investment.
Well, they're so receptive and open. So they're sponges.
Yeah.
But by the time you get to, I'm not sure what age it is, that sponge is not there anymore. You use the critical mind. You start to doubt your own, you know, your own ability or that you can do it without imitating.
But if they're hearing these sounds when they're young, then it would be much easier for them, and they won't struggle like people at my age. And although my generation is so much better than the previous generation with our pronunciation, the NG sound, I'm still not happy with doing
the,
that. And you
the
heard
nah,
me, and so you heard me failing to roll my R properly a couple of times this morning, like, you know.
We may need to make some chants around that. We do have a chant, you know, is ahaka mana para tawanga fa. So that's the practice of the vowels, because we're a vowel language. So that hence why the challenge of learning te reo is really related to the way that you hold your mouth, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it's the physical movement.
It actually is to do. Yeah. A linguist would say, well, you know what? You just got to practice those vowels because your mouth physically, the physiology of what we've been exposed to is very monolingual. So we're not used to having words, kupu, that end in a vowel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and all of Māori, all of kupu Māori end in a vowel.
So it's 5 past. We need to move on.
Yes, we do. We've gone off the topic, but I think we've covered ourselves.
But it's all the topic as well, isn't it?
It's on the topic.
I should just mention. I mentioned Kupu Cafe with Whairuhi and Sammy doing that, and that's 4 o'clock on Tuesday. So that'll be 4 o'clock today. Also replayed at 11:30 on Friday and 8 o'clock Sunday night. And Taringa, you just missed that. That was yesterday, about 11:15. That plays, and that's if you really want to get into the real detail of it, but it's a very entertaining show as well.
I do want to ask, is it possible to play an artist called Te Kahu, E Hine E? She's coming into Whangaroa on the 8th of October to the Yacht Club, and she's a beautiful, beautiful wahine Māori, and
We might do that. I might play the ads because I've got to play them now, and then we'll play that song. That'll be the next song that plays after the break.
That's a deal.
That's the deal. All right. Thank you for coming in, Naranoa. It's brilliant.
Ai, nga mihi nui ki a koutou. Kia pai ora. Ai, piki te ora.